What is it that you're missing out on? And are you okay with not living in that or having that? Hey there, and welcome to Work is Third. I'm your host, Dawn Hunter, and I'm so glad you're here. Have you ever had a season where your life looks full on paper, but something still feels a little off? I know I have. In this episode, I'm talking with Natalie Warren, a psychotherapist, wellness expert, and retreat leader, about how we can start to shift out of autopilot and reconnect with ourselves in small, meaningful ways. My favorite part? Natalie shares so many practical ways to rethink what matters. Let's listen in. Hello, Natalie, and welcome to Work is Third.
Hey, Dawn. Thank you for having me.
I'm really looking forward to our conversation because we have so many things in common, and you're doing some of the work that I would love to do one day, including hosting international retreats. But before we get into all that, I'm wondering if you don't mind sharing a word to describe how you're doing today.
Yes. Today, in this moment, I feel grounded. So kind of settled in, calm, focused, present.
I love that. Is there something that is contributing to the feeling of being grounded today? How did you arrive at that feeling?
Well, my morning practice always starts me there by breathing, but I just feel like I am in a space where I know what I'm doing. I feel good about it. And that doesn't mean it's not challenges, but I feel good about it. My energy is high today, so feeling grounded.
Okay, so tell me more about the morning practice.
Yes, before I do anything, and I mean grab the phone, talk to anybody, pray, meditate, whatever, I take 5 cleansing breaths. And it settles me in the moment of remembering that I am in this day, right? Because the mind will pull you into another moment, another day, another week, that I'm in this day, that I'm alive, that I have purpose, that the breath is a gift, and I get to embrace it. And so when I don't do the practice, I feel off. I can tell the difference. But just a simple 5 breaths in through the nose, out through the mouth.
And this is something you do on habit when you wake up?
Mm-hmm. It is. I put my hand over my heart and a hand over my abdomen, and I just start with that, those breaths.
Okay. So I feel like maybe the universe is sending me a message because you are the 3rd guest in a row who has talked about breath work. And so I'm like, okay, let's keep going with that. I imagine this was not a thing you always did, right? So how did you incorporate this into your morning routine?
Yes, it is not. So thank you for asking. I'm like many of us. We end up holding the breath or just forgetting about breathing. But about 3 years ago, I had a thought. I was on my computer on my bed, and I had a thought that, you know, I want to be a breathwork facilitator. It's like one of those moments that we have. And I followed the guidance, which eventually within a few months led me to becoming in a program. And that program led me to become a facilitator. And I just learned the power of breathing, the physiological benefits, the mental, the spiritual, the emotional. It's a holistic approach to wellness. And so because I understand the power and I benefit from it, I can't help but not to do it, right? Like, I want to do it.
You know how good it is for you, so you want to do it. So what can listeners do? I'm curious. And also me, you know, I'm asking for a friend. And the friend is me. How do we create our own practice? Or how do we arrive at a spot where maybe it's not 5 breaths in the morning, but some point during the day or like when we're in stressful situations? How do you help people to find their own breathwork practice?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most important pieces to start with is what we call breath awareness, like being aware of your breath. What most of us don't realize is we hold our breath a lot, right? And it doesn't have to be for bad things. Like, I think of the moments where I'm holding my breath when the phone rings because I'm like, who's that? Right? I mean, those are moments where we hold the breath. But if you are in a practice of just starting with watching your breathing, to just notice it. Is it deep? Is it shallow? Is it fast? Is it slow? Do I hold my breath? It's a neat way to start the practice without feeling like you have to do a lot. And then for those that are wanting to do more than that, I would say set a timer. And every time the timer goes off, you breathe. Just take a breath. And that also can be a great practice to start.
That's a good idea. I'm even sitting here now as we're talking, trying to take deep breaths. I'm like, I don't know if you can see my chest, right? No, because I'm like trying to be very intentional because I realize I'm sure I hold my breath quite a bit during the day, but I also do a lot of shallow breathing during the day because I'm constantly on the go. And I'll notice it sometimes, like, I don't remember the last time I took a deep breath today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
So what else do you do after your morning routine starts? Do you have other things that are part of your morning routine?
I do. I love music. So I usually will go to my playlist. It's usually an instrumental song. And that's my time where I take from the breathing, I go either into prayer and meditation. So it's about me making my request for today, setting my intentions, noticing what I need to give my attention to in that day, because there's so many things that are pulling for my attention. And it's like, what needs my attention so I can stay focused and productive in the day? And I'll usually do that before my kids interrupt the process. So those are the first things that I start the day with.
Do you have to get up early because you have children and like you need to make sure that you have that time for yourself? Or are you more of an afternoon, evening person?
Don, as I've aged, I don't know if I'm any of those times a day. But in the morning, yes, I typically wake up before them. My youngest has been getting up earlier for some reason lately, though, so she interrupts my early time. But I try to definitely create that space before they get moving. Yeah,
I'm not a morning person. And I've been that way my whole life. So I will be interesting to see if it shifts more as I age. But I only in the last few years have created a morning routine where I get up, I journal, I drink my coffee, I have quiet time in bed, hang out with my dog and my cat. And it's very peaceful. But I would say before that, it was get up, hop in the shower, get ready for work, you know, eat breakfast, go to work. And so many of us are in that boat.
Right.
What do you observe with people who are in that boat and like have this challenge getting started with a routine? Do you help people figure out like how to set your own morning routine?
Well, I think you said two things that are important. I think it's about people setting their own routine. So sometimes we feel like we have to do it a way we've heard someone else do it, right? So letting go of the expectation, and also letting go of the expectation that it has to be for a length of time, right? Because sometimes people will say, I don't have 30 minutes. I don't have an hour. So for me, when I even talk about those five breaths, it literally takes me about 30 seconds to do that. So letting go of the expectation of how long it has to be. I feel like it just has to be intentional.
I love that because I often associate time with whether or not I think I can do something. And I was just talking to someone else about doing an evening breath practice or breathing practice and was thinking I used to do like a 10-minute yoga practice before bed mm-hmm. to help my body to relax and to breathe. And then I would be like, oh, I don't have time to do this. Or when am I going to fit this into all the things I otherwise do in the evening? But the five breaths, like you mentioned, that's 30 seconds. That's something that's easy for people to incorporate.
Yeah. So starting small, I think that's also helpful. Yeah.
So how else are you taking care of yourself? You have a breathwork practice. You have a morning routine. What else do you do during your day to take care of yourself and prioritize your well-being?
I love, love, love dancing and moving the body. So as a result of the pandemic, I started working virtually, so I don't get in nearly as many steps, right? But my body craves movement. Like I can feel it in when I am moving. So a part of my practice is I will try to do anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes of movement. And if I can incorporate a dance in that, like I'm in happy land because now I'm listening, I'm dancing, and I'm getting some exercise in. I also love silence, and I didn't, Dawn, always love silence, right? So some people, silence can be intimidating because the noise in our heads can get really, really loud. But I've grown to absolutely love silence. So every chance I get, I'm cutting off a TV, I'm cutting off a noise machine, I'm cutting off something so I can just have silence. So it's another practice that I love.
Natalie, we have a lot in common. I also love dancing. I love a good dance break. Love moments of silence, actually. Try to find those every day.
I love it.
Yeah, I find that having my mind clear, and I don't know about you, helps me to feel more creative. And so I do work, I do consulting work, but I put a lot of creative energy into like this podcast and things that I want to create that are associated with it. And I find that a clear mind helps me to be more creative and to really have... There are no limits, or at least there are fewer limits when my mind is clear, my body is rested, than when I'm stressed, right?
Right, right. And I'm glad you said that. I think what we don't realize is that we need space to be creative. We need space to imagine, and we need space to dream. people don't think of it that way, right? But all of those things require you to have space, and clearing your mind is a way to have space.
Yeah. And if you're and clearing your calendar, which is one of my life challenges, not being too busy. Honestly, a recurring theme on the show is make room for the magic. That if your calendar is always full and you're always busy, that you're not leaving room for those moments of creativity or connection to find you.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you've been in the work that you're doing for 16 years now?
So yes, as a psychotherapist, I've been in private practice. I just celebrated 17 years. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah. And so is the, are the retreats and the workshops and the corporate training that you do, is that more recent part of your work that has been added on after you started your psychotherapy practice?
Yes. Corporate wellness has been a little over 5 years. Retreats actually have been 10 years. And then as I mentioned, breathwork has been 3.5 years now.
So how are all of those things aligned in your life? I'm really interested as a newer entrepreneur who has a million ideas and wants to do all of the things. How are those integrated, or how do you keep them separate so that there are boundaries between, and maybe they don't need to be, but are they integrated, or are there boundaries between those different aspects of the work that you do in the world?
Yes, great question. There is a level of integration with them. The practice, there are ethics and boundaries that are beyond me that I have to honor. But I do it with my clients. So the wellness, the breath work, all of that is a part of who I am. I think that's the integration. It's an extension of who I am. And the mission and the purpose that I have, which is to really awaken individuals to the truth of who they are, so that they can create a life that they love. And so I come into all of those parts of my business with that knowing.
I'm curious on the work that you've done and the clients you've worked with, what does it look like? Or do you have an example of when someone has really had that aha moment, had that shift, had that change, that they start to live the life that they love?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Letting go. They start by letting go. And I think a lot of it is they start to let go of the expectations and the roles. But then they also let go of the guilt, because sometimes it's the guilt that we have that we want to live a life that we love, right? And we feel bad about wanting more or feeling ungrateful for what we have. And so I've seen it. I've seen it where people have started business ventures, have new relationships, they've let go of relationships. They make set boundaries so that work doesn't define who they are, and they get to enjoy fun. And as we talked about, being creative. I've seen it in so many ways. Yes.
That's really incredible, because I feel like so many of us are stuck in a life that we're told to, that we should be living. And then we're not really, even if we do things that we love, like say we incorporate dancing, or like we go to the gym, or we are artists and make time to create, I think a lot of us are still stuck in doing what we should be doing. Do you see that with the people that you work with?
Absolutely. I think of someone in particular who she has a dream of doing yoga and having a bed and breakfast and just living this life that she absolutely would love. But she's afraid of all the shoulds, right? Like, what would this look like? How will even my family of origin, what would they think of me if I considered doing something so completely different than what I'm currently doing? And it's interesting to see her go through that process, like many people. Of what do I choose? Because here's the other thing that I think of. Having freedom to choose is actually scary. Because then people are then, we have to be responsible for the outcome. And that's scary.
I didn't think of it that way. But that does make sense, that when you have that agency and you have to handle the consequence, good or bad, that is a hard thing for people to deal with. It's easy to just do what you're told to do or do what you're expected to do without question. Okay. Yeah. Okay. How do people get over that?
Well, one of the things that I talk to women about specifically is whether you choose or not, you've chosen. You can't escape choice. you can't escape choice, that you choose either way. But also allowing them to see what they are missing out on, right? While it could feel very comfortable, very familiar, doing the things that I know to do, what is it that you're missing out on? And are you okay with not living in that or having that? And a lot of the times, many people will realize this is not just what I want to do. It's an extension of who I am and what I really came to the earth to do. And sometimes that's a bigger thing than the fear.
I wish that a few years ago when I was considering leaving my full-time work and making a shift, that I had somebody say, sit down and think about what you're missing by continuing to live this life that you're in. I actually did read the book Burnout. I cannot remember the author's name now, but one of the things they say is, you know, weigh the costs and benefits of staying the same. I think it's a really powerful activity to say, am I actually doing all the things and living my life the way that I want to? Or what would my life look like if I had more time or I had better relationships or I was healthier, and being intentional about it, as you were saying.
Right, right. Or if I just felt the way I want to feel. Many of us want to feel fulfilled and meaningful and all of those things that we often get when we're doing what we really want.
I reached up to grab something off of my shelf over here. So I used to read Oprah's magazine when it was in print. I don't know if it's in print anymore, if it's just digital.
It is. I got it the other day.
Did you really? Yeah. So I used to read it like religiously, and I loved when she would include aha moments for people. And I cut out one and put it in this little dollar store frame because it's called Listen to Your Inner Voice. I always ask, and I think this might have been Melody Hobson, but I always ask interviewees what their dream is. One applicant answered, I dream of owning a Christmas tree village. I was like, why are you sitting across from me at an investment firm in Chicago if you really dream of growing trees? Don't waste time. It takes a long time to grow trees. You've got to know your own truth and trust it.
Wow. Says a lot.
It does say a lot. I keep this on my desk because it's a great reminder of what is the thing that you really aspire to do. And there's no reason that you can't be living that life.
Right. Right. I agree.
So I would love to talk to you more about retreats. And you said you've been doing these for 5 years now, right?
I've been doing them for 10. We've been in the international space for going on 4 years. Yeah.
Okay. So how did the retreat business or the retreat work that you do come into being? And what are your retreats designed around?
Wow. They came into being from a conversation. So a friend of mine and I had talked probably 10 years prior about our dreams, right? Talking about dreams and the tree analogy you just talked about. And one particular day she says, Natalie, I want to bring some women to Atlanta and I want you to pour into them. And that was the beginning of what people see now when I am traveling across the waters, was a conversation and a friend who said, I see you and I know your dream and I want to support it. So she said, I'm going to bring women. And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to invite some more people. And we ended up with our first retreat it's been 10 years ago. So yeah, 2015. I expanded though beyond that. So I was afraid, like many people, to grow. So I was like, let's just keep it in the people that I know. And then challenges came up in the business and I was about to quit, Dawn. I said, I can't do this no more. It's not working. It's costing me too much. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to try one more time. And I found a program and a mentor. And that opened me up to the possibilities of, have you considered international waters? Have you considered doing things outside of this? And I did. And it took off. And it took off.
First of all, I'm so excited to hear that and glad that that shift occurred for you. And I'm curious about what that looks like. You said it was an opportunity, that first retreat, to pour into people. What did that look like for those people who were at that first retreat?
Yes, it was really centered at that time all around empowerment. So really just empowering the ladies through, I didn't have the wellness component because I hadn't grown into that part of me yet. But obviously I was a therapist. So I'm all about helping people to do self-awareness and self-discovery, transformation work. I had been doing that for a while. And so that first group was about empowering them, allowing them to see themselves and reflect and kind of ask themselves questions about what they wanted to do next. It's where it started. And then as I grew, I started adding wellness, and just now my retreats are more wellness focused.
And what does wellness look like in the retreat space?
many things. Detoxing the mind, the body, and the spirit is a big part of it. So we're going to eat healthy foods. Many of them aren't plant-based eaters, but most of my retreats incorporate that just so we can give the body a chance to heal itself. We got to take the stuff out that's not helping and put the stuff in that can. It looks like the emotion detox, the mental detox of letting go of stuff that no longer serves them. And that can be through journaling, breath work, coaching sessions that I do, and then renewing the spirit, right? Connecting back to themselves and their values, their beliefs. It becomes a detox of mind, body, and spirit.
I really love the idea of having the space in a retreat to do that. But I'm also thinking, could we create that in our own like lives? Like, could you create yourself like a Saturday mini retreat where you just like you do these things where you journal, you do breath work, you eat healthy or do something to detox, as you're saying, digital detox on top of that?
Yes and no. So I'm going to answer it both ways. Yes, you can. I think you can create a space within your environment. The most powerful thing, though, that happens with the retreats is we take you out of your environment. There is something that happens when we get out of the familiar. And I see that. And so a lot of my retreats, we are immersed in another culture, which allows you to see how other people live, but also to take from that culture and put this into practice into your own life. So while you can get some of that from being in your home, taking you far away outside of that space allows you to do that. It also resets your nervous system, right? Because traveling can impact your nervous system. but it allows your nervous system to reset. And as you're in a new space, you learn, oh, these are things that I can take with me. And it opens your mind up to new possibilities for your life. Like people start going, I never thought I could do such and such. And so it opens you up in a different way than being at home. But people can create space in their own homes.
Excellent point. I mean, when you are out of your element, so to speak, you have to be more present because everything is new to you. You're having to navigate a space differently. You're meeting new people. You're much more present and aware, I think, than when you're at home and you're surrounded by the familiar. So that's a great point. I went to a retreat in Paris, and I had been to Paris before, but I loved being there in the retreat. It was such a beautiful reminder of life being bigger than my job every day. I was at a really stressful point in my career, and I was there for, I want to say 6 or 7 days. Maybe I was gone. But I loved that time because it was just like, oh yeah, there's a world outside of work. There's a world outside of my everyday life. And traveling helps us to remember that.
What she said was perfect because what I was thinking was travel takes you out of autopilot. And so much of our daily lives, we're in autopilot, right? We're just doing it over. It breaks that cycle, which often allows you permission to say, okay, so what is it that I want? So yeah.
What are some of your favorite places that you've traveled?
Ooh, so many beautiful places in the world. We've been to Bali, Indonesia. I've been there 3 times. I love, love, love Morocco, Africa. The vibrancy, the colors of Morocco, it really brings up imagination, creativity, inspiration. Joshua Tree in California, the desert. Oh my gosh. The absence of noise pollution and lights just really opens you up in a way that I had never expected. There's so many places, but those are some of my favorites.
All great spots. I've been to Morocco, loved it. Love the energy, love the vibrancy of life there. Never been to Joshua Tree, but when you were talking, you made me think of Montana and just these open spaces and clear skies. And Wyoming, actually, I was in Wyoming earlier this year and got to sleep in a teepee near Bear Lodge, and it was gorgeous. So there's no light pollution, completely dark. It was just beautiful and amazing, and just being one with nature was so cool.
Mm-hmm. So you understand that feeling. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk more about some wellness practices. So you mentioned dancing, you mentioned breath work, you mentioned stillness. Are there other things that you do that also help you to stay grounded? You started out the conversation saying you were grounded. Like what else does your day look like?
Yes, you mentioned one that I don't do on a daily basis, but I do incorporate it, which is getting in nature, like being somewhere under the sky, whether that's the park, the beach, the mountains, the deserts. I love the rhythm of nature, which is when we are in it as humans, it regulates our system. It doesn't take us long, or it's not difficult to relax in those spaces, right? Like it naturally happens for us. So I absolutely love being in nature. Yeah.
I am curious if your retreats incorporate then a lot of nature opportunity, or does it really vary by location?
Mm-hmm. All of them have a form of nature. One of the elements is going to be in play. So yes, absolutely.
That sounds like such a great, well, I say agenda, but I'm like, agenda sounds so boring, but a great experience, you know, designed to help you to relax, to be present, to be grounded. That sounds wonderful. So I actually was thinking about your work overall, the work that you do as a therapist and wellness retreats and corporate wellness training. And it sounds to me like the work that you're doing is your purpose. And that's a discussion that comes up a lot on this podcast, which is what does it mean to say work is third, and what is work? And for some people, their work is their purpose. And for some people, their work supports their purpose.
Right.
So when you hear work is third, what do you think? What comes to mind for you?
Good question. And I like the idea that, yes, sometimes work is purpose, and sometimes people are working on their purpose through work. Because I don't want anyone to think one is better than the other. My work, though, is an extension of, as I mentioned before, of who I am. And so if you would have met me, Dawn, in middle school, I was doing this work. I didn't have those titles, right? I didn't have the knowledge. I didn't have the degrees. But they will tell you, my friends, people who know me will say, I knew exactly who Natalie was going to be because it is so much of who I am. And so I embody the work. Now, there are parts of the work that I don't enjoy, right? But it is such an extension of who I am. It oozes out of me. Yeah.
You raise a good point about the way that we are when we're young and the things that are passions for us. I would love to go back and talk to some of the adults who were in my life and say, what did you think I was going to be when I grew up? I asked my mom this the other day, and it was interesting because she said, I didn't know. I just knew you were going to be successful.
Wow.
But I would love to ask more people, like, what did you think? What did you think my skills were? What did you think, I was going to be? Because it can help us to understand ourselves better.
Right. In our purest forms, right? Before somebody or something told us we can't. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So what did that look like for you when you were young? You were in the practice of maybe healing and wellness and therapy when you were younger, how did that come out? And how did people know that this was who you are?
I had a very, which people probably will hear, very nurturing spirit. So friends would call me mama, and I was the same age as them, right? I was the same age, but there was this motherly, nurturing, calm presence that I had. I had a friend that got pregnant in high school. She was 14, and I knew it. And she had been hiding it. She was able to hide it up until probably 6 or 7 months. But I was her counselor, right? Helping her to figure out how to tell her family members. I mean, I didn't have anything spectacular. I just had a natural skill set and a natural presence about myself that I became that person for so many people around me.
I used to say that I wanted to be a neurosurgeon, but I think naturally I was just great at like problem solving. Mm-hmm. I was always the problem solver of my group of friends, and I continue to be that person to this day. I think I'm the person that people come to solve problems.
Right.
Yeah. And it's only recently that I've, as an entrepreneur, thinking about how to build on that strength. Like, if this is something I know I do well and naturally, how can I incorporate that into the way that I serve the world now?
Right. Absolutely. And I've also done work on the flip side of that, which is because that's how people know me. How do I break out of that role? Because when you're that person for everybody, it's like, well, who do you go to, right? Who makes space for you? So I've also had to do work on undoing some of that because I am the counselor, the therapist, the consultant, the confidant. You know what I mean? Like, I've taken that role on. And I've had to be mindful of both sides of the coin.
I think that's a good thing to put into practice. I was just thinking as you were saying that, you know, it'd be helpful to have somebody in my life who solves problems for me. You know, the burden of always being the problem solver or the person who is kind of, you know, there's always that person in the family who is the one who takes care of everything or who like manages affairs and things like that. And so like, who does that for you, as you were saying, right? And having that go-to person who can help you, at least help you to either to do the thing that you are for other people. I didn't really thought of that, but that's like a really, that's a really great idea.
Right. Yeah. I had to find places for me to be held. For me to be held. Yeah.
Right. That also, I think, is a good reminder that we have to also ask for what we need and seek that, you know, in the people around us. So there may be that person in our lives right now, and we just haven't had a conversation with them to say, here's what I need and what I could use from you as a friend, as a supporter in my life.
Right, right. And I had to get clear, Dawn, on what I needed beyond asking for it. Here is my challenge. My challenge was, Natalie, you're not in a crisis, so then you're okay. Because most of the time, since I've taken on that role, and I did it very young, people come to me who are in a crisis, right? And in my mind, I would say, well, everything's good in my life. And so I had to realize things don't have to be bad for me to have spaces to be held in, if that makes sense, right? Like, I still can have space and things can be good, because I realized that I was not allowing myself that, because I would think, well, I'm okay. I don't need anything, but that's not true. I still need to be held in spaces that see me and hold me.
It's been a big mindset shift for me as well. I was thinking about when I was really stressed at a job I had a couple of years ago. I did a lot to try to mitigate the stress I was feeling. So I did yoga. I mentioned doing like the evening yoga and breathwork practice, you know, keeping a regular fitness routine, et cetera, and doing all these things to stay healthy. But it was band-aids on what was happening right to my body. And I was thinking, I should have all of those practices in place before chaos happens, before crisis happens. It's just a regular part of your being, so that when crisis does occur, you are able to, you know, those habits are natural to you. They're a default to help you navigate the situation, as opposed to something you try to put in place to help stem the losses, if you will.
Right, right. And you have a reservoir, right? So when you find yourself in those crises, you're pulling from a reservoir, not from an empty space. Yeah.
So how, what are some other ways that you fill your reservoir? I'm curious.
I am also a communicator. I love to talk. So I have to have a space to just say what's on my mind or my heart, right? My husband oftentimes fills that space to be sure that I am not just venting, because I'm usually not talking about things that are even bad. Sometimes I'm just sharing a goal or a vision or something that I want to see happen. But that helps me to be able to put it out there and share it. For me, that fills me.
I feel like I've gotten more introverted as I've gotten older. I find that I want less. I want more stillness. I want more quiet. I want fewer conversations. But when I have conversations, I want them to be deeper.
Right.
Yeah.
I and agree. I find, we're similar. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I find sometimes it's hard in today's world, right? Because people are not, there's a lot of information, but it's shallow rather than deep. And that has really driven connection between people too, is like connections are more shallow and less deep, I think.
Right, right. And when we added in the digital world from text messaging instead of calling, social media, I feel like I check on people, quote unquote, through social media. Yeah, the depth of those things are so different.
So are you a reader? You said you like music. I'm curious, like, what are you currently listening to? What are you currently reading?
My listening taste can change. I love R&B of the 90s and 2000s. I love inspirational Christian. I love pop. My kids pull me into pop. So those are my musics of choice. Reading, I absolutely love. I was a professional student until I was 28, Dawn. And I tell the story, I would have stayed in school if I didn't run out of financial aid. Like, I love learning. Oh, you said you're the same. We must know each other from some other place, right?
Right.
My book list, though, I don't even know what I got open right now. I can't even think of the books that I have several on my on my nightstand. So yes. What about you? What are you reading?
Well, so I just finished reading Bury Our Bones in the Midnight Soil, which is a book by a woman who wrote The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, which is a very popular book, was a bestseller. I didn't love the Bury Our Bones, but I'm reading The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue right now, and I'm really enjoying it. It's very interesting. But then I also am reading nonfiction. We're reading Gravitas for my book club. I'm in a Lady Leaders book club, and we're reading nice. Gravitas for our next pick.
Yes. So yes, you're an avid reader as well, nonfiction and fiction.
Yes. Yeah. Although it's funny, I was never really a nonfiction person. I don't think until a few years ago, I ever picked up a memoir. I just was never interested in that. Wasn't interested in a lot of the self-help books or things like that. And then I joined this book club because I was really interested in connecting with other women leaders and learning from other women entrepreneurs. And over time, I've really loved the books that we've read. They've helped me. They've pushed me to think differently about life. In fact, we read Rachel Rogers' We Should All Be Millionaires in that book club.
Nice.
And that is totally one of the reasons why I'm sitting here today doing this work that I'm doing and doing this podcast, is that book was life-changing to me.
Gosh, you'll have to send it to me, the name. I heard you say it's something millionaires, but I would love to read that next.
Yeah, We Should All Be Millionaires. It is funny because it has come up so many times on this show, other people who have read it, or and then it's like, oh, you read that too? Such a good book, but it really pushed me to think differently about wealth and about what we can have in life. So you talked about like not limiting your dreams and saying, why say that you can only have this? You could have, there's a whole world of possibility. And that book made me realize that.
Right. I love that. I love those type of books that just, stretch you beyond what you know.
Yeah. So you have mentioned that you have children, and we didn't really talk about what it's like to be a parent and an entrepreneur and doing the work that you're doing.
Yes, I do. I have three little people, Dawn. So at this moment, they're 12, 10, and 8, which means at some point I had a baby, a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. So it was rough. It was rough. And the funny thing about that story is I didn't even know it was rough. It was probably about 5-6 years into the last one maybe being born. And I thought, I was in survival mode for years. I was in survival mode. So it has loosened up a little bit. They're more independent now. They have their own things that they want to do. They still need a lot from me at times, but I feel like I found a place, a space that works. And I have a super supportive husband. Like, there's no way I could be in Bali for 12 days without a husband who holds it down. He holds it down. So I do recognize as well, it helps me to be able to do the work and be a present mom.
It's great to have that relationship and have the support of your husband in that way, because you're right. It's like not possible. I mean, it makes your dreams more possible when you recognize each other's dreams and offer the support to help the other person to achieve that. So it's beautiful that you have that.
Absolutely. I don't take it for granted. Yeah.
So what did it look like when your kids were younger? You mentioned being in survival modes, and how did that affect you?
What did it look like? As many of us in survival mode, I was going through day to day. I was, making things happen. But I realized, Dawn, there were moments of time that I didn't remember. My husband would be like, "You remember when?" And I'm thinking, "No, I don't remember that." Because in survival mode, you're really trying to make it from one day to the next. But I still was functioning. I was still running my practice. I probably had less clients at the time, but I was still running the practice. I was still, taking care of the kids. I was still living, and I still was dreaming. So that's also the time where I started launching retreats. Like, I still was doing things, but it was a moment where I realized I was tired. I remember a day I was thinking, "I'm tired." And I just would keep going. And I told my husband, "I'm tired." And I realized I needed to make some changes at that point, because what I was doing wasn't sustainable. But yeah, I was still living.
What an interesting point to make, that you can be doing all these things, amazing things, things that bring you joy, and you can also still be struggling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think people think that, at least I feel like there's a narrative, even if it's not what all people really believe, but there's a narrative about, if you're unhappy, everything is unhappy, or you can't find joy in things, or vice versa. But I think there's really, you hold both of those things every day.
Right. And for me, I realized it when I felt disconnected from myself. I looked in the mirror one day and I was like, who is this person? Right. I just felt very disconnected. And I stopped being able to hear my inner voice. That is huge for me because I have always been intuitive. And so, yeah, those were the moments when I realized everything was still good, but those things for me were missing.
You mentioned you made some changes. What were some of those changes that helped you?
My schedule for the practice had to shift. I definitely made changes there, spending more time with myself, making sure I'm doing practices that are supportive for my own overall well-being. Some of it happened naturally, though, as the kids also grew. Remember, like as they became in places they didn't need me as much or they were going to school, it allowed me space to reflect, to realize, okay, I want to do something different and put some of those things in practice.
The shifting the schedule has to be, to me, one of the most profound things that anyone can do is thinking about the two things you said. How does your schedule align with your values and what will best support your well-being? And then how much time are you making for yourself? Because a lot of us are not making enough time for ourselves.
Right, right. Absolutely. And one of the questions I had to say as I cleared my schedule was, I also have to make room for opportunities. Because at one point, my schedule was so jam-packed. This has taken us into the pandemic. As a helping professional, I was packed. I had no room for opportunities. If something did come through, I couldn't even have taken it. And opportunities outside of myself, but opportunities with myself. So I had to make room for opportunities.
Right. I love that you said that because, right, make room for the magic. If you're always so full, if your calendar is always so full, you won't have room for opportunity. And those are what help us to grow and expand and find new joys and new connections. So you have to make the space for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really struggled with my calendar for a while being too full. And I was doing things that I loved as well. So I was going to plays or going to dinner with friends and going to Zumba 3 times a week and doing all of these things that ostensibly I was in love with and brought me joy. But I also, like you, I felt tired.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also work was very draining at the time. But like I just felt like I'm doing these things that I love, but they don't feel like things that I love right now. They feel like I'm doing something that's just routine or going through the motions or doing it even on days like not giving myself permission to say, I don't have to go to do this today. I don't have to go work out. Just giving yourself permission to say, I need something different than what I have right now.
Right. And
what can that look like?
Right. And without it having to be something bad or wrong happening, right? You still can feel that way.
Yeah. Right. I love that. All right. So what I'd like to do now is transition into asking you the 4 questions I ask every guest. If you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. And I think it's very much aligns with what we've been talking about. And the first question is, what is something that it is easy for you to say yes to?
What is it that's easy for me to say yes to? Things that I love, it's easy to say yes to. I love, love, love creating, and I do it in many ways. And it's easy for me to just step into that space.
I wish it was easy for everyone to step into that space. So that's a beautiful thing. Then what is something that is hard for you to say no to?
It's hard for me to say no. It's hard for me to say no. And I struggle with this sometimes in my practice when people really need help, right? And I'll make an arrangement or switch some things around on my schedule. And I had a consequence of that in the pandemic because I burned myself out as a result of that. But it's hard when I know people need help and I have something that I know could help them.
What is interesting to me is that nearly every guest has said it's hard to say no to people who need them.
Wow.
And I would love to hear your thoughts, especially as a therapist, about why it's so challenging for us and like how we can have better boundaries around that, right? So you don't get burned out, especially if you work in a caring profession, as you know, so many, I know so many people who do, so many of my family members. How do you say no, even though you want to help? Mm-hmm. Or how do you say, no, but I can help you in this other way?
Right. I was about to say, sometimes the no is me seeing how either I can help in a different way or someone or something else can help them. So I don't have to be the direct person doing the helping. Sometimes that shifts. But I also have to ask myself deep questions around, and I challenge other people, why is it that you have to be the thing that helps, right? Like, is it tied to my identity, right? Because then it could be a deeper thing that I need to work on. So it's also a moment for me to reflect and ask myself that question.
That's a good point that we don't often say, why does it have to be me? What other way can I help? Mm-hmm. And a good reminder to ask yourself in those moments. Mm-hmm. All right. So we've actually, most of the conversation has been about the ways that you take care of yourself, because I was just very interested in your background and the ways that you do have these practices that really support your well-being. But when you think about it, your own self-care practices and setting boundaries and finding joy, resting, what is something you do really well?
I love singing. Singing and humming are really, really good for your nervous system. Most of us don't know that. So singing, humming, rocking and swaying are also really good practices. And sometimes I'll do that while I'm talking to people. I'm rocking and I'm swaying. Those are practices that I do. And I like to do, I like to include those because they don't really require me to do a whole lot more, but they give me a whole lot more.
So you do a lot of things really well that we heard about, but I'm curious if you think there's anywhere where you still struggle.
Yes, of course. We all have things that we work towards or we struggle with. Sometimes it's fear, right? Fear of many things that I've worked through. The past, it would have been fears of showing up, fears of being seen, fears of not being able to handle things. It's evolved a little bit more. Sometimes I don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable, so I might dim my light. I want everybody to win. So dealing with underlying feelings of guilt, I was talking to my husband about that, this inherited guilt that we've been given, right, from society, from family. When it shows up, I definitely can see it and working on retelling the stories in my head. I'm constantly working. I love personal development. So I am always wanting to be a better version of myself. And so those are some of the things that I still actively am working on.
A reminder to all of us to always be learning and always be growing.
Yes.
So I've really enjoyed this conversation. And I'm curious, I often ask guests, what is something that you are taking away from our conversation together? I'm taking away a lot of tips from you and reminders to breathe, to practice things even when I don't need them, to make room for joyful dance or movement during my day, maybe sway a little. But what are you taking away from the conversation?
Wow. I'm taking away that there are people that are very much like me. I know sometimes we might think that it's just us. And so as you and I have been talking, Dawn, we're like, yeah, me too. Like, yeah, me too. And I think that's always helpful for me to see how interconnected we are really with people. And that helps me to feel like I'm not alone in this world. And there are people who are very much like me. And so that sense of connection is what I'm taking away today.
I love that so much. And I say often that I feel like connection is what gets us through what is currently a challenging moment for the country and for the world, probably. Just a lot of changes going on. But connection is what will power us through, and finding those ways to realize we have more in common than we know.
Right. Exactly.
So thank you, Natalie, so much for sharing your story and your perspective today and for being a guest on Work is Third.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for listening. If this conversation resonated with you, I'd love for you to take a moment to reflect. Where in your life might you be moving on autopilot? What is keeping your plate full? And what would it look like to create just a little bit more space? As always, please like, share, or leave a review and help other people to connect with a different way to live and work. Until next time, remember, work is third. Put yourself first.